This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning. It is early, but Sean Myers here on the Fan Early Morning Show with you for the next 40 or so minutes before I turn it over to Adam Crowley and Doran Dickerson, who will be coming via Studio B this morning. Have a few topics that I want to focus on, and I welcome people to join in the conversation. You could call us at 412-928-9370. That's 412-928-9370. And I'm encouraging people to give a call to touch on the first topic that I want to talk about, because yesterday I was making my rounds for my high school football coverage that I'm gearing up for. High school football will get underway in just about a week's time, as teams, by and large, will be playing a week zero game. They'll have the option to do a second scrimmage, but over the past five or so years, the vast, vast majority of those teams will actually play a real game as part of the second week of practices. They'll conclude, instead of that second scrimmage, by doing a week zero game. And so beforehand, I go around and look at some of the local teams that I cover in Westmoreland County, and probably the most prominent team is the Belle Vernon area Leopards. So I was out at their stadium yesterday, Weir Stadium. And for those who are unaware, it is a very unique stadium because of the look of it. It is called the Beach because they have gold turf, which makes it stand out from pretty much every other high school football stadium or soccer field, whatever, in the entire WPIAL. And it has its unique look, and it makes it certainly stand apart from the rest. And so it got me thinking about sort of unique venues at the highest level of professional or major college sports. And so anyone who wants to chime in on maybe some of their favorite sporting venues, now obviously there's hundreds and hundreds that have unique qualities across the country and across the globe. By and large, I kind of want to focus on the ones that are most well-known. But I think it's an interesting conversation, because when I think of unique sporting venues, the first thing that comes to mind is Major League Baseball, and the fact that baseball stadiums can be a little bit different because it's not cookie cutter, whereas every football field or every hockey rink or every basketball floor is basically the same in terms of the dimensions. Obviously, it has to be 100 yards for football, and you know, you can't have, I guess, the same uniqueness and quirks that you can see in Major League Baseball, where there's not set dimensions for any given park. And so some of the most famous baseball stadiums are known for being a little bit different. So I think of the Green Monster. That's one of the first that comes to mind in Boston at Fenway Park, and the fact that they have a massive wall out in left field. And then you think of Wrigley Field. The Pirates, of course, have played for over a century there, or right around a century at least. Wrigley Field with the ivy walls around the outfield that makes it so unique, as we already have a caller chiming in. So let's go to the fan hotline here. All right, caller, feel free to introduce yourself. Do you want to join the conversation about unique venues around professional sports?
Yes, I do.
Okay, who's calling?
Will.
Will, give me some thoughts that you have. Is there anything that comes to mind when you think of unique sports venues?
Oh, yeah, Boise, Idaho.
Yeah, absolutely.
Boise State.
The blue, yeah, the blue turf. Is that something, do you like that?
I do. It's unique. It's different. I think it's really cool. I think that being a college player, I'd love to play there.
So take me through. Have you ever played? I know you said Boise, obviously, with the blue turf. Have you ever played or seen a sporting event at a venue that has really been unique or stood out?
The only one I would say, since I'm local, is PNC Park, just because of the beautiful skyline and the way it's positioned. That's about it.
Yeah, so when I think of PNC Park, and that was going to be one of the ones that I touch on briefly, I also think of, I don't even know the name of it now, but where the San Francisco Giants play. And I will say that the corporate names that change all the time, that has taken a little bit away of the yeah. mystique of some of these. But I think the thing that's cool about both of those, both PNC, where you can hit the ball into the river, or McCovey's Cove in San Francisco, I think that's a nice little added feature. Doesn't always come into play, but I think that that's pretty cool that you could get some waterlogged baseballs, potentially, if you hit the ball far enough over the right field stands.
Right, and then before they took, you know, but now it's Actorshire, I did like the Heinz bottle catch-ups. I thought that was pretty cool in old Heinz Field.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is one thing that I've noticed with the NFL is you obviously the field itself is going to look pretty much the same. But, for instance, in Tampa, they have the pirate ship. So those little things that, well, baseball, you truly do see it on the field itself. I think with football, in particular the NFL, you get some pretty cool things that kind of add to the atmosphere of a football stadium.
Miami, too. Miami used to have the swimming pool. I don't know if they still do, but I always thought that was a unique touch, too, having a swimming pool in a football game.
Yeah, I Miami might as well. Certainly, that makes sense. But I think Jacksonville is the one. I think it's Everbank Stadium. And so that actually kind of transitions in. And I appreciate the call. Thanks so much for chiming in and joining the conversation. I know that swimming pools and water is something that has always appealed to me. And the pools are, I think, maybe a little bit more recent. But for a long, long time, as I go back to the mid to late 90s and looking at all the different Major League Baseball stadiums and even just playing video games for Major League Baseball, Kauffman Stadium, where the Kansas City Royals call home, that has always been one that has stood out because if you hit the ball far enough, you can potentially launch it into the fountains that they have. I think it's kind of in right center field there at Kauffman Stadium, and they are still there. And then Angel Stadium, where the Anaheim Angels obviously play, kind of similar out to center field. They have a whole little setup there with different rocks and then waterfalls that come down. Don't often see balls make it there, but it is very, very cool to me to think of potentially hitting the ball that far that you could get it into the fountains. And that's a nice little quirk for those stadiums. And the last caller talked about the swimming pools. Well, that's the case for a couple of fields as well. Chase Field, where the Arizona Diamondbacks play, has a pull out beyond the right center field fence. Every now and then you'll see the ball make it into the splashdown area. And as I mentioned, the Jaguars have that at their Everbank Stadium as well. Now, obviously, with the Jaguars, you're not getting footballs thrown into the pool, I don't think too often. But a nice little unique wrinkle that provides. A few other ones that come to mind for me. For the Dallas Cowboys, I don't know that this is necessarily a positive, but it is certainly a factor. AT&T Stadium has that massive jumbotron that multiple times has sort of gotten in the field of play on kicks, and I think in particular punts, where they have to basically do it over because the ball is launched so high, and that jumbotron is so massive that it could potentially get in the field of play. And so when I think of that for football, it also brings to mind Tropicana Field, where the Tampa Bay Rays play, and the fact that they have catwalks that multiple times have been struck by batted balls. And so Tropicana and AT&T Stadium are kind of opposite ends of the spectrum. Tropicana, by and large, is considered one of the most hideous eyesores in all of professional sports venues. I think, especially when you think of Tampa and the fact that it's, you know, pretty warm climate. Now, I know they do get periodic rain down there, but it's almost a shame that they have a indoor venue like that in a pretty nice climate, whereas Dallas, the fact that you have the Jumbotron in play, well, that's just kind of, I guess, part of the fact of doing business in a multi-million dollar, I think it's a billion-dollar venue where they have state-of-the-art everything, including what I believe is probably the biggest Jumbotron in any sports venue in the world. But yeah, that is a factor in play, both with the Cowboys and with the Rays. One of my favorites that unfortunately no longer exists is at Minute Maid Park, although at the time when it opened, it was called Enron, and that was Taos Hill, the slope out in center field. They had a legitimate hill. It's been gone for a while now, probably about 15 years or so. But it was hilarious to see center fielders basically running up an incline, a steep hill, to try to place some balls. And I know the reason they got rid of it is because it was somewhat of a safety hazard. Not ideal for center fielders to have to try to run up an inclined surface in the midst of tracking down a fly ball. And you saw some injuries. You saw some goofy, quirky plays with the ball. Kind of, you not know where it's going to go off of the carom, off of the ricochet. But I thought that that added a little unique flavor to the Houston Astros. And while it's gone, I certainly have fond memories of just something standing out, something being different. And again, this started with my visit to Weir Stadium and for Belle Vernon area Leopards football, where they have the gold turf. I know gold turf, blue turf, it doesn't affect the gameplay, but something like Taos Hill out in Houston certainly did affect the gameplay. Mostly, I'm talking about stadiums, baseball stadiums, even some football stadiums. Every now and then, you will get an arena that has a unique quirk to it as well. And a couple of college basketball venues come to mind. Minnesota's Williams Arena, where the Golden Gophers basketball team plays. I talked about how Taos Hill in Houston was potentially a safety hazard. I have no idea how Minnesota's Williams Arena still has its unique aspect, and that is a raised floor, which is, I don't know, probably at least 3 or 4 feet above the rest of the arena. So these players, if they're running more than about, I don't know, 5 feet out of bounds, they could potentially fall off of this raised arena platform and drop down several feet. And I would imagine at least at some point in time, there was a player who turned an ankle or maybe got a little banged up after they were going for a loose ball. It is a little scary, I would think, to head into Williams Arena, especially as a visitor for the first time, and know that if you were sprinting full speed after a loose ball, that you potentially could go for a little bit of a tumble. Obviously, that's something I'm sure the players are aware of before they take the floor, but that adds a unique aspect in Minnesota. And then Oregon and the Matthew Knight Arena. For those who have followed Oregon athletics, the Ducks always have a unique look to them. Seems like they have about 50 different combinations of jerseys for football or mix in the helmets as well. Well, their basketball arena is no exception. They have at times a floor that is almost hard to look at. It is colorful. It is different. I don't know that it's necessarily a great look, but if you have not seen it yet, Matthew Knight Arena, look up some pictures of the University of Oregon's basketball court because it is very bright. Might give you a little bit of a headache if you stare at it too long, but certainly it is something unique. And to me, that's what professional sports venues are all about. I know back in the 70s, it seemed like baseball and football stadiums were all cookie cutter. They were all the same. Three Rivers was almost identical to the venues in Cincinnati and Philadelphia and some others. But getting some original aspects to these different venues, I think, is what really stands out. That was what was the case back 100 years ago when they were building places like Fenway Park and Wrigley Field. They wanted them to have their own unique characteristics and to stand out. And to me, that is still something special about sports venues across the country and even across the world today. When I looked up some of the top different unique venues, there was a lot of soccer stadiums that came to mind. I wanted to mostly focus on North America and either the professional sports or major college sports venues as well. Again, if you want to chime in, give your thoughts on maybe a stadium that you've been to, an arena that stands out, or one that you've always watched on TV that you've enjoyed seeing, you can join the conversation at 412-928-9370. That's 412-928-9370. Already had one caller mention Boise State and Bronco Stadium. Of course, the blue turf that stands out in a big way. We'll take a break. If you want to join this conversation, we'll continue it after the break. I also want to get to what could be the last year of college football as we know it before the cataclysmic change to the game, the change of playoffs, the fact that power conferences and rivalries will never be the same after 2023. The Wake Up Show is presented by 84 Lumber. Put your positive attitude to work at 84 Lumber. You can apply at 84lumber.com. It's Sean Myers here on the Fan Early Morning Show. We'll be back to talk about college football in a little bit. And later on, I want to get to a very important cause in the borough of Plum that is really, I think, bigger than sports. And I want to touch on that because that is something near and dear to my heart. It's the Fan Early Morning Show right here on Sports Talk 93.7, The Fan. It's Sean Myers here on the Fan Early Morning Show, taking you for the next 20 or so minutes before I turn it over to Adam Crowley and Doran Dickerson, who will be coming way of Studio B this morning. Excited to hear that perspective from those two, but want to continue quickly the conversation on unique, different sports venues, as we're going to welcome in a caller, Kyle from Butler.
How are you?
Doing well, Kyle. How about you? What's your thoughts on some unique sports venues?
I wouldn't say anything sticks out about it, but Cameron Indoor Stadium, I went down there for a Duke game, and the building just looks like any other building on campus, and it only fits 9,000 people in it, and you're kind of all on top of the court, and it's kind of a home field advantage, really.
And obviously the history of the program adds so much to the mystique and the legacy of that venue. Is it something where do you think that venues being built now in recent years just don't have the ability to have that special environment with all the heritage and everything comes with it? Are we going to sort of lose that with the years to come, do you think?
Yeah, I think so, especially with college basketball, with how schools are changing conferences and you're not really having those rivals anymore, and I think that's kind of what's being lost in the college basketball world.
And you said with Cameron it's kind of an intimate environment. I always think now that when stadiums or arenas are being built, it's all about what's going to create the most money via tickets and suites and things like that, that you probably won't get that on top of the floor intimate atmosphere maybe that you spoke of at Cameron, huh?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Also, I think what plays a factor in that is the relationship with the fans and the players. I think they're trying to get away from as far as being right on top of the court, because there's been so many incidents in the NBA and other sports that I don't think they want the public that close to the players anymore.
Yeah, and that's in many ways probably a good thing. So I guess it could go either way. It's a pretty special environment when you have that intimacy and you feel like you're right on top of the action, and you say something, everyone that's on the court can hear it, but there's also negatives to that certainly. So I guess you can look at it either way. Kyle, I appreciate you chiming in, and thanks so much for joining the conversation this morning.
Thank you.
All right, so we go from one caller to the next. We have someone else on hold. Caller, feel free to introduce yourself and then tell me your thoughts on potentially stadiums, venues, whatever that you want to talk about in terms of the uniqueness of sports venues.
My name's Nick. I forget the name of the actual stadium, but the Altoona Curve, where they play their home games at, the amusement park in Wright Field.
Oh, yeah. So I have actually driven past there dozens and dozens of times. I went to Penn State, and anyone that knows, if you're going to Penn State from Western Pennsylvania, you're going through Altoona. And yet I've never gone to a game there. Have you attended a game there?
I have. Many years ago with my father, it was a great time, best seats. There was no cheap seats. Everything was right there on the field. It was great.
Now, I know you mentioned the amusement park. Is it like Del Grosso's? Is that the name?
I forget. I even forget if it's even in use anymore, but just seeing it in Wright Field was amazing.
Well, I was going to ask, so did you, when you were at the game, was the amusement park and the roller coasters and whatnot in use? Because I know I've been at Hershey and Hershey Park, which has been a venue for many years and unfortunately is no longer the venue for the high school football championships in Pennsylvania. And you could see that in the background as well with those amusement park rides there, which is, I think, kind of a unique little twist to it.
Absolutely. It was very nice to see you.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining the conversation this morning.
All right.
All right. right. Well, as the phone lines continue to light up, we'll go to our next caller. Caller, introduce yourself and give your thoughts on unique sports venues that stand out to you. Oh, we lost that caller, unfortunately. If anyone else wants to join in, you can call at 412-928-9370. That's 412-928-9370. Yeah, good conversation, because there's a lot of ways you can take it. As I mentioned, I wanted to go with something that stands out, that makes it unique. But I know that Kyle was talking about maybe a historic type of feel to a venue. That's what's awesome about sports, is that you can have different appreciations of so many different aspects of it. Some people, for instance, love jerseys and uniforms. That's not really all that important to me, but I know that that is something that I have friends that, oh, this is a great jersey, this is a hideous jersey, whatever. For me, as I said this morning, we're talking about unique, special venues. I think that is one of the best aspects of baseball, because that truly is different than the other sports, because the playing field itself, it is not all the same across sports. Obviously, football, basketball, hockey, it has to be the same dimensions. You really don't get as much uniqueness in terms of the actual field of play, although some of these venues have, you know, ancillary things that do differentiate in a big way. But baseball, that is to me always something that stands out about the sport. And I can even think of some quirks of fields that I've played on way, way back in my day that made them unique. Maybe not always in a positive way. I remember, I think there was a field in Greenfield where the pitching rubber was not completely aligned with home plate. That's not exactly a good memory necessarily, but definitely one that I always will remember from my playing days long ago. Well, if we don't have any more calls on this, I want to transition into what I think is a massive year for college football, because to me, this could be the last year of college football as we've known it. And it's going to continue to thrive, maybe even get more popular and bring more money in to college athletics in the future. But 2023 is going to be the last year of what it has currently been, which is the five power conferences, the four-team playoffs, and then things are going to change drastically and radically in a big, big way very soon in 2024. There's going to be some good, there's going to be some bad, I think, that comes with these changes. The good is that the playoffs will finally be expanded from four teams to 12 teams, and I know that this has been a point of contention. Some people thought maybe it would even expand to 16 teams. I think maybe at some point we get there. 32 teams and beyond seems a little ridiculous for football. It makes sense for basketball, but I don't know that it's ever going to happen in major college football. But I think 12 teams is a massive step in the right direction, because when you take four teams, and sometimes we've seen there's really only two or three teams that really are going to have a chance to win the championship anyway, but you kind of eliminate teams that have really good regular seasons, just aren't ranked all that highly. And so if you're in a conference, let's say, for instance, the Big 12, that doesn't have maybe the heavyweights as the SEC or the Big 10, and you win that conference, you're the best team in the regular season, you win the conference championship game, there should be a reward that comes with that. And I think that should be a team that gets to the playoffs if you win a Power 5 conference championship. Now, the real question is, what's going to happen when the Power 5 conference, the lesser of those conferences, really start to crumble? Obviously, we know that the Pac-12, as we know it, will cease to exist after this final season of it here in 2023. There's only four teams remaining. I don't even know if there will be a PAC conference in the future. The Big 12 is going to change quite a bit. The SEC and the Big 10 will be adding some powerhouse teams, Texas and Oklahoma, USC and UCLA. Soon enough, it will be Oregon and Washington as well. But as these conferences continue to change and evolve, the fact is playoffs need to be expanded, because there has been years where there's been some really good teams that have won conferences that have been left out, or that have been one loss teams, but just because the powers to be deemed that another one loss team was better than them for whatever reason, because of maybe their prestige with the program, or you're trying to nitpick the strength of schedule. really, I think the best case scenario is to put more deserving teams in and let it then be decided on the field who the true champion is at the end of the day. And yeah, maybe it will still be one of those top two or three teams that have dominated all season long, but it's a little bit closer to the beloved basketball NCAA tournament when you expand it to 12 teams. I think that is a good thing. Another thing that's good, and this really has nothing to do with realignment, but we're going to get a pretty significant rule change in college football that will create faster games, as they're going to now have the running clock on first down. So you won't have the stoppages with the exception, I think, the final 2 minutes of the second and fourth quarter. So it'll be very similar to NFL rules in that regard. So the 3 hour and 45 minute or 4 hour college football game should be trimmed down by, I don't know, 15, 20, maybe even 30 minutes in some instances. They're still not going to fly by any means, especially with some of the lengthy replays that we've seen and all the commercial breaks, but it should speed up the game a little bit. Obviously, the bad, this has been talked about a lot. Many rivalries will be lost in future years when college football, as we know it, ceases to exist. And the bowl games, they've already become sort of meaningless by and large. Well, with the expansion of the college football playoffs, with 12 teams getting in, pretty much anything that is not a playoff game in terms of the bowls will be completely meaningless. And I don't even know. I think at some point, I know that everyone still wants to make money and sponsors still want to sponsor bowl games, but I don't know that teams that aren't amongst the final 12 will care whatsoever, because you go from having four teams in the playoffs, well, that means that there's still several other top 10 teams that are playing in prominent bowl games. That's not really going to be the case after this season here in 2023. 2024 and beyond, I think the bowl games will have even less meaning if they are not part of the college football playoffs. Want to take a quick break, come back with some final thoughts on a topic that has been paramount in recent days and certainly hits close to home for me in particular. It's the Fan Early Morning Show. Sean Myers right here on 93.7 The Fan. Sean Myers back to put the finishing touches on this Fan Early Morning Show before I hand things off to Adam Crowley and Doran Dickerson at Studio B. Just want to go outside of the realm of the sports world briefly, because for those who know me and for those who don't, I am a product of Plum. Grew up in Plum, went to Plum High School. I have lived there for the majority of my life up until about 8 years ago. I have always lived in Plum. I am just about 15 minutes away from the community now, so not too far from there. My mom still lives in Plum, and I'm sure a lot of people are very aware of what happened over the weekend with the tragedy with the house explosion in Rustic Ridge. And so I would not be doing my part if I did not encourage everyone who has not already to try to find some way that they can contribute, help the cause in any way, shape, or form. And the great thing about social media, there's so many drawbacks to it, but one of the great things is in a situation like this, so many people get information out there for how they can help. And up until yesterday, I really wasn't sure how I could go about helping, because I know a lot of people who fortunately weren't directly affected by the explosion, but lived close enough that either they were without power or something of that nature. And so many other people I know just in the community who have volunteered to help in some way, shape, or form, whether it just be donating bottles of water, things of that nature, offering to, you know, welcome in a family to their house for a day or two until they got back on their feet. And again, there's so many different ways. I was able to find a GoFundMe, which is going to some of the families directly affected that I was able to give a little donation to. I encourage everyone out there, if they have not already, to find some way to help, whether it be monetarily or by volunteering their services, time, even just offering to be an ear for maybe those people who are in need. Because anything that you can do to help this cause, I think, is significant for those other people who are in their time of need right now after this tragedy that has just unfortunately taken the lives of five, but has affected literally hundreds and hundreds of other people in the Plum community. So it's great to see everyone coming together, and I want to encourage everyone to continue to keep that up as well. That'll do it for the Fan Early Morning Show. Thank you so much for tuning in over the past 40 minutes. I'll now turn things over to Adam Crowley and Doran Dickerson upcoming momentarily. But for now, signing off, Sean Meyer saying thank you so much for tuning in right here on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Sean Meyer's back to put the finishing touches on this Fan early morning show before I hand things off to Adam Crowley and Doran Dickerson at Studio B. Just want to go outside of the realm of the sports world briefly, because for those who know me and for those who don't, I am a product of Plum. Grew up in Plum, went to Plum High School. I have lived there for the majority of my life up until about 8 years ago. I have always lived in Plum. I am just about 15 minutes away from the community now, so not too far from there. My mom still lives in Plum, and I'm sure a lot of people are very aware of what happened over the weekend with the tragedy, with the house explosion in Rustic Ridge. And so I would not be doing my part if I did not encourage everyone who has not already to try to find some way that they can contribute, help the cause in any way, shape, or form. And the great thing about social media, there's so many drawbacks to it, but one of the great things is in a situation like this, so many people get information out there for how they can help. And up until yesterday, I really wasn't sure how I could go about helping, because I know a lot of people who fortunately weren't directly affected by the explosion, but lived close enough that either they were without power or something of that nature. And so many other people I know just in the community who have volunteered to help in some way, shape, or form, whether it just be donating bottles of water, things of that nature, offering to, you know, welcome in a family to their house for a day or two until they got back on their feet. And again, there's so many different ways. I was able to find a GoFundMe, which is going to some of the families directly affected, that I was able to give a little donation to. I encourage everyone out there, if they have not already, to find some way to help, whether it be monetarily or by volunteering their services time, even just offering to be an ear for maybe those people who are in need, because anything that you can do to help this cause, I think, is significant for those other people who are in their time of need right now after this tragedy that is just unfortunately taken the lives of five, but has affected literally hundreds and hundreds of other people in the Plum community. So it's great to see everyone coming together, and I want to encourage everyone to continue to keep that up as well. That'll do it for the Fan Early Morning Show. Thank you so much for tuning in over the past 40 minutes. I'll now turn things over to Adam Crowley and Doran Dickerson upcoming momentarily. But for now, signing off, Sean Meyer saying thank you so much for tuning in right here on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan.